You are listening to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast, episode number 10. And today, me and Mark are talking real estate. Hey, friend, I'm Sarah. And welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast. I am here to show you that financial independence can be for anyone who wants it badly enough, and that investing in real estate doesn't have to be scary, take a vast DIY knowledge, or involve heaps of debt. When I am not sharing my own progress to FI, I'll be picking the brains of fellow like-minded, debt-conscientious investors. I am so glad that you are here, my fellow aspiring retirees. Hello, everybody. My name is Sarah, and I have Mark on with me today. And tell people a little bit about your background. So this is going to be a real estate podcast today, and we're diving through kind of your portfolio, and you have a lot more experience in this area than I do. So I'm very excited to pick your brain today. So, and Mark, you're on Instagram. That's how we got acquainted, through real estate old school.
I am. In fact, I was on the phone with Rick an hour ago. He called me and he said, Mark, you know what? And I said, what, buddy? And he says, I just looked up our first contact. And I said, really? And he said, yep, it was September. And he gave me the date. He's really good at that stuff.
Yes.
And I guess I had reached out to him.
Oh, nice.
So, and I think one of the guys that came on as one of, like, I don't know what you'd call him. He came on as my videographer. And now he is in the other office now doing full-time sale or purchase. But anyway. That's kind of when Instagram got important to me. So that's kind of how we got started with that. And that's how we met.
Yep. But
I got started in real estate in 2009, 2010, after the crash. Yuko and I, my wife, lost everything. Mm-hmm. And just a really quick story.
Yeah.
She went to Japan to get away from it all. We were broke, destitute, not destitute. They hadn't taken our house yet. Because it took so long then. And she went to Japan with our then now 16-year-old and to go see her parents. And I was left with no money, no job, no prospects. And I went to an investment club meeting, the investment club for women. But there was, there were men there. And listened to a guy talk. And you know, I had no idea what he was talking about. I come from a construction background. I'm a contractor. Mm-hmm. Since I was a little kid, I've been a construction worker. No real estate background, really. And sat down next to a guy that was flipping mobile homes. So that light bulb went off in my head. And I went out and started talking to mobile home park managers the next day, knowing I didn't have any money. And I ended up finding for $100 in Orange County. Now, Orange County is expensive.
Yes.
Our mobile homes now probably average around $70,000 or $80,000 for a mobile home here, all the way up to $300,000 or $400,000, depending on where it's at. But I found someone that would sell me one with no space rent until I sold it, and they sold it to me for $100, and I fixed it myself. We flipped it, sold it for $17,000. I put in $5,000. During the time after I bought it, I knew I didn't have the money to rehab it. So some lovely angel sent me a credit card with $2,500 balance on it. I don't know why, because I had so many credit cards that were maxed out. And we got that, and my mom was able to loan me a little bit of money. And that's how we did our first one.
Oh, wow. So you got your start. So you originally were a builder, and then 2008 crushed that, I'm guessing, is what you walked through.
Yes.
Of course, because no one's building and there's no loans and everything dried up all at once.
I was at the time I owned a very small chain of decorative koi pond stores.
Oh.
So we were building and selling equipment at the time. But my background is building apartments and houses. But that's what I was doing for several years.
So you learned very quickly about, like, the luxury expenses too. Then, with the koi ponds gone.
Nothing. Yeah, yeah. It just, like, crickets overnight. And then Yuko's the landscape designer by trade, contractor, and that's how we met. And of course, her business dried up. Nobody needed to landscape anymore.
Right.
Couldn't borrow money from their house to do it. So that's us.
Nice. So that's kind of how you started. So after your first flip, what was your second deal? I like to dive through the first few to kind of see how you got on the ground.
Yeah, so first one was good. Mm-hmm. Second one was another mobile home. I partnered with the guy that I sat next to at that investment club meeting. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I found the deal. I did all the work and he financed it because I still didn't have any money. The money I got from the previous one, I sure couldn't afford to put that back. I needed to buy groceries.
Right.
So he financed that. I ended up with a faulty contract with him. I never got any money for it.
Oh, wow.
He ended up selling it, keeping the money, and that was that. During the time I was doing that, when we started another one, same deal, I found it, he financed it, I didn't mm-hmm. paid on that one. Didn't get paid on that one either. So then during that time, Yuko started raising private money. Mm-hmm. And she started doing it in Japan. Mm-hmm. And she didn't do it on purpose. She was just talking about real estate over there. Mm-hmm. And then she started a whole side business, raising money and selling homes, investment homes to Japanese people. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we sold over 400 homes to Japanese investors.
Wow.
Turnkey type investments. And she was able to raise a bunch of capital. She published a couple of investing books in Japan, a lot of seminars. She's a bigger deal than me, you know.
That's awesome.
I know how to put everything together, but she did all that hard work. And now, over the years, we've amassed 43 units. We've got 4 in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We have a second home over there and 3 rentals that are sitting empty right now. So I'll make you a good deal on that. If you want to quarantine over there for 14 days, you may.
Right. Yeah.
And then we have apartments in Sacramento. And then in Southern California, we have a couple of single family and a duplex. We've sold everything here and kind of dispersed it out into more cash flowing areas.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So are you, okay. So you're in Hawaii with 3. And then where are the rest? Where are other states? Yeah.
Yes. Hawaii, we sold 2 last year. So we're left with 3. Mm-hmm. And then 30 some odd in Sacramento.
Yep.
And then 3 in Southern California.
Okay. Yeah. So all inside California.
Except for Hawaii.
Except for Hawaii. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But it's very interesting because everyone and their brother climbs out of the woodwork to say you can't invest in California.
I invest. Yeah. And I'm working on several things right now. So yeah, you can. It's just, it all boils down to private money. Mm-hmm. It all, you know, if you go in thinking you can finance it, there's 2 things you got to do in California. You've got to have private money or a really good bank financing. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have access to deals. Mm-hmm. And most people don't know how to do that, you know, and that, yep. that requires, that's a, I think 50% looking for deals, 50% finding private money is a good numbers to put on.
That's really interesting. So you can still find deals that like hit the numbers that like me and Rick are running, for example, like are you still meeting like the 1% rule and all of the foundational kind of numbers?
No. It's all
not even close.
No, creative financing and, you know, zero interest. And you've got to put a lot of work into making a deal work.
Right. So what kind of numbers do you focus on when you're kind of saying what's a good deal for you?
Terms. It all comes down to terms. It really does. The price is important. It's the terms that really, really dictate whether it's a good deal or not. If I know my private money is very inexpensive, mm-hmm. and it should be right now. Interest rates are so low. If people are coming to you asking for a really high interest rate, then, you know, you just nicely let them know that there's other options for you.
Right.
And people are used to getting 10-12% on their private money, and it's really not that anymore. It's 7% or 8%. And then 5% for long term if you're going to hold it for a couple of years and then refinance. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, because as I watch a lot of Facebook groups, and there are still people that are talking about 11% for seller financing and or like different deals and like this private money. And I've just been wondering how that works because interest rates are so low and everything else. I was wondering kind of how it affected that market.
It doesn't. And those are the kind of people that either you gently educate them or walk away because it's a waste of time. You know, it's one of those things it's so hard to find a deal right now, but the hardest part is walking away from all of the maybes. Mm-hmm. So you just find the yeses, and that sounds like a motivational speaker, but it's really you spend so much time communicating with maybes that, yeah, well, you know, and it's, look, either they want to sell or they don't, and either the terms are right or they're not. And mm-hmm. you can only do so much. If they don't want to sell, then they're not going to, and you should move on.
Right. So what's the best way you find your deals? Do you do like any like yellow letter type things? Or are you still driving around for properties? Where else do you?
We drive, actually, Yuko and I were driving around last night. We went for a walk on the beach and we drove around afterwards. But that's mostly stuff for our little secret wish list for the next house we want.
Right. So, stock properties that you'd like to personally own.
Well, property that I might want to move into down by the beach. Yeah.
Right.
But mostly we've got cold calling and texting. We do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And word of mouth is starting to grow. Everything that we've gotten up until this point, because it's shifted so much. When we started, it was all MLS. Once we got past the mobile homes, it was all MLS because there were so many REOs. Mm-hmm. And it was relationships with REO agents, which a little tidbit, I would strongly suggest looking up all the big REO agents in your area that were super prolific during, 2008 through 2012 and 13, and reach out to them and see if they're still involved, see if they still have connections with banks and servicing companies. Because if they do, they're good people to know.
Yeah.
Because once that starts again, right now, because the market is so frothy, even though it's going to crash and burn like crazy March, January, February, March, right now it's so frothy that you have to actually go out and find stuff. You have to mm-hmm. knock on doors and do things like that. But for us, we do a volume. So you can find deals by knocking on doors, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah. And I found there are some agents that are listed in my state, at least, that deal specifically with foreclosures. And I've just found that by Googling around on the internet. It's amazing what you can find out there. But I think I have a lot of people that follow my account that are also just getting started. And so I like to kind of review things for new people as well that might not even know how to go about that.
So the way to approach an REO agent is, number one, you got to find out if they're really still doing it. And if, see, an REO, there are no REOs here. I mean, if you see one, it doesn't matter because the price is through the roof. It goes, it sells for a regular price. But, you know, when the market turns, which of course it will, it always does, mm-hmm. It's probably going to turn hard this time. So REO agents will probably be busy again. So get to know them. Let them know that you're a closer. Let them know you have money source. If you've done a project or you're working with someone, talk about that project. Let them know that you can be counted upon mm-hmm. and you can make quick decisions.
Yeah.
I've got people that bring stuff to me and that will start bringing stuff to me again that know that I make quick decisions. And that's important because their thing is clearing inventory. The faster they can clear it, and if they can double end it, that's even sweeter.
Yeah.
So don't. That's another thing is don't go to them with your agent to represent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
It's a waste of time.
Right. Because they kind of get benefits on both ends. And they can also, my understanding is they can kind of cut down on like their personal commission if they're working with you from both sides. That's kind of what I'm learning slowly.
There's a lot of things you can do. Usually what I do is I let them double end it on the purchase unless they can't. Some offices don't allow it. Mm-hmm. They don't like it. It's sticky. And then I'll let them have the relist if I'm flipping it on a buy and hold. Obviously there's nothing for them afterwards.
Right.
But you know, there's always things that you can do, mm-hmm. you know, you can refer them out. They were a great agent. They worked good for me. You can refer them to somebody else. So that goes a long ways.
Sounds like networking was such a big thing for you in the early days, like finding that real estate group really got you kind of going in California.
It did. And actually my wife ended up, I signed her up for it while she was in Japan. There was a thing called the 60 day challenge. And it was kind of funny because she knew I wouldn't follow through true on that. But she did. And she actually, during that time, in 60 days, she got two houses under contract.
Wow, that's awesome.
Knowing nothing. So
yeah.
that was a great kick in the butt for her. And we learned a lot about making offers. We were making 3 to 4 offers a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Is she still go to Japan? Do you still have properties over there kind of on her end? Or is that something you got out of?
Just her parents' house right now and a couple of empty lots that probably aren't worth anything. No, no, property in Japan tends to devaluate. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's weird.
Except I did not know that.
Yeah, property prices go down there, you know, unless something changes. Yeah, it's kind of weird over there. So no investing in Japan.
And so for your properties, what are your California numbers? Because I'm in Indiana and I know I'm a big numbers person. I don't know how comfortable you feel like sharing because I pick everyone's brains on all their numbers. But I'm like, our prices are so cheap here. What is the an average property price for you?
We're talking mostly buy and hold, right?
Right. Buy and hold real estate.
Here's the funny thing is just to explain, we have to flip here in order to buy and hold here.
Okay.
The numbers rarely work unless you're spending, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 a month marketing to homeowners to buy their houses under market.
Yeah.
That's what we do. But as a newbie investor in California, you need to have a source of income in order to make money owning mm-hmm. it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So essentially your flip money is the quick money you need to do to afford.
I call it my day job. So yep. Flip money, wholesaling money, any real estate. I'm a real estate agent. I occasionally sell something. Yuko occasionally sells something. You know, we can usually get a couple $100,000 a year income from selling a few things here, much to make that kind of money here, thankfully. Yeah. And that kind of feeds our investment fire along with our private money. So a deal here would be, so there's a city here called Santa Ana, which is our main, that's our county seat. Mm-hmm. And it was the place to be back in the early 1900s. And then it became more blue collar over time. And is kind of known for lower income. It's actually rejuvenating now a bit. Mm-hmm. The houses are so spectacular. They're the little houses, but the average 2-bedroom, 1-bath house there, pre rehab is about 400,000, post rehab is about 550.
Yeah.
Right. For a little 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 700 square foot house.
Right. So that's crazy.
And that's in an area that you may or may not want to live in.
Right.
So those
you're more C-class property, probably.
I'm all C-class.
All C-class.
Except for Hawaii.
Yep.
Hawaii is B-class condo rentals. So yeah, a C-class house in Santa Ana would rent for probably $2,700 to $2,800 a month for a 2-bedroom, 1-bath.
Okay.
Little. I've got a duplex there. There's a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, two 2-bedroom, 1-bath houses, and mm-hmm. they rent for. I rent those really, really low because mm-hmm. I've had long-term investors, and I bought it for nothing. Mm-hmm. Literally, bought it for nothing. So I haven't raised the rents in a while because I like these people. They don't ask for anything. So I think I'm getting $1,500 a piece for those.
Okay. Yeah. So, whole different number game out there.
Yeah, but see, the Midwest, it's hard to fail there. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's hard to fail if you don't, you know, if you do things right. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to do things right.
Right.
It's just not. It's just finding your area and staying on top of it. You know, we were in Memphis for quite a long time. And once we figured out Memphis, it was good, but then it was time to move on.
Mm-hmm. But Memphis is a hard area. I have one friend that invests in Memphis, actually, and it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good areas that you invest in and some areas that you stay away from. And we went into the areas that you stay away from to begin with. So, but we've learned a lot of hard lessons. We've lost, you know, I don't know if you saw my post on it the other day, and I don't even remember if I put it in my story or an IGTV or whatever, but Yuko and I added up what we've lost in the last 11 years investing. Mm-hmm. Lost over $1 million. Lost, yeah. not
Yeah.
Not like missed opportunities, but just literally lost. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And I think that's so good to put out there. I feel like there's so much hype and there's not as much of the, I lost $1 million. Do you want to still follow me? But that's probably reality. Like if you follow people like you or Rick or some of these other accounts I follow, you have big losses. Like everyone has a horror story or two or three. Yeah. And that's life.
I've literally got one right now in Hawaii. We were doing some developing over there and I've literally got one there right now where I think I'll end up getting some money. But I wrote it off. I put my investors in it and it started going south and it's too long of a story to talk about now, but I ended up paying off my investors, but I'll end up taking probably $190,000 loss on that. But the money that I've made in the meantime on other stuff, it shouldn't have happened and it shouldn't happen and you shouldn't make mistakes, but everybody does. Mm-hmm. But if getting up every morning and going back to bat, then there here I go again, by the way.
Right.
It's getting up every morning and going back to bat. And if when you stop, you lose. When you keep going, there's a chance to get a big, big, big home run. And but there is no chance if you stop. You'll never get that money back if you stop. And everybody stops there. Like, I lost X, and I'll never do this again. I hear that story all the time. It's like, oh, yeah, I had a rental once. We lost a bunch. You had one. Like, So, you know.
Your multifamily properties, your condos, or you do single family also. What's your favorite? Or do you have, like, a specific model you follow? I know Rick is, like, very classic. Like, he likes white rectangles.
Yeah. If you listen to our, we do an IG live every Wednesday. And if you listen to us, we kind of banter back and forth about what's better. It depends on where you're at. You know, our rents in our apartments are pretty good, but there's something to be said for that. And so let me give you a short answer as short as I can. When you have a group of people together, they tend to talk. And if one person has a problem, other people perceive that they have the same problem and it can cause an issue. You don't get that with single family. Mm-hmm. So there is that. And the turnover in apartments is much higher, you know, whereas I might get someone that stays for a year, Rick will get someone that stays for 3 years. And I know that from duplexes and houses. I own those too.
Yep.
But the fact that I'm getting a high rent on a small apartment and it's all under one roof, that helps. You know, I've got one water heater. I've got one roof because I get all single story row type back to back places. So there's one plumbing wall that goes down. And, you know, I'm a contractor. So I figured all that out early on, what makes sense, what doesn't. I don't like two stories. So I don't like anything better than the other. I like diversity is what I like.
Yeah. And it diversifies your portfolio. I think I came out of the world of like Dave Ramsey and I hate debt to real estate and the whole diversification thing in real estate, something I'm still learning and considering. I think that's what a lot of newbies kind of starting out are afraid of, is getting all in real estate, but there's so much diversity here. There's so many different options where you can do like vacation rentals or, you know, long-term housing, and it all has different risk that carries with it. So
right now I've got three very expensive condos in Hawaii that are empty because they're vacation rentals.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, Waikiki outlawed vacation rentals on the first of this year.
Oh,
so now we're all 30-day rentals, which changed everything.
Yeah.
And this, I swear this happens every 3 or 4 months. Someone's going to throw something at you that's just going to boggle your mind and you're going to want to quit. And that's what I mean by getting up every morning and swinging. It's so hard sometimes when you're used to getting $15,000, $20,000 a month, net cash flow a month, and all it drops down to $2,000 because this part broke.
Yeah.
So how do I fix that part? How do I get rid of that part? What do I do? You know, and
were you Airbnb-ing those? Or was that something else?
I avoid Airbnb because I don't like their platform. But yeah, VRBO.
Yep.
And we did that ourselves. We had 5 of them and we did it ourselves for many years. I had someone in my office here that managed it for us. Mm-hmm. And then we had someone there that would greet people and take care of repairs. That got to be a bit much. So now I've hired someone over there and they do it for, I think, 20% of the net.
Okay. Not too bad. Is that a common going rate probably over there?
30%.
Okay. So that's pretty good.
30%. Yeah.
So how have you been impacted by COVID? I think that's like everyone's question nowadays is, it was very different for you because obviously your vacation rentals, that's a huge impact, but also apartments versus your other units. So.
Yeah. I think out of all of our units, we've only got one guy that can't pay. Everybody else, Rick and I put together some letters and things, and my property managers, Angie and Jimmy in Sacramento, are really, really hands-on. We work together closely with them. I got letters out to everybody, the idea of a letter. I'm more of a finger pointer than a doer, but I kind of wrote an
outline. Disperse these letters.
yes, please. And actually, please write it for me, too. But we got letters out beforehand when we saw there was going to be an issue and started helping people apply for unemployment and things like that. And we'll see what happens when all of the honeymoon area period is over, where, people have been kind of having fun with this and they're kind of distracted by it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not doing that.
But I know what you mean. Yeah.
Been like, I'm home with my kids. I know there's going to be some financial difficulties down the road. Well, we're down the road, guys. Mm-hmm. It's going to rear its ugly head here pretty soon. So that's the second wave financially right now. The first wave was everything got shut down. What the hell are we going to do? Mm-hmm. So this is the second wave right now that's coming to fruition. When unemployment runs out, now they're talking about the $400 a week for people to go back to work. But I think that's going to be the second wave because a lot of people aren't going to have jobs to go back to that think they do. Mm-hmm. And, there's numbers are out, right? I think it was the New York Times that put out an article on whether you believe the New York Times or not. 44% of Black-owned businesses either out of business now, small. These are small businesses, mm-hmm. 1 to 10 employees. Are either out of business or are going to go out of business. 17% of white-owned businesses. It's disproportionate in that I think the amount of reserves that people have differs. And mm-hmm. a lot of these businesses we're talking about, we're talking a lot about people that have, it's a one-man show, like, the person that does the masseuse, the person that does flower arranging or catering or things like that. And it's going to affect everybody. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the Black community, and it's that sucks. That
it does
really
suck.
But it's there. What do we do?
Yep.
Educate. Anybody can start from zero, mm-hmm. right? All right. You're almost. I was talking to somebody the other day, and you're almost. If we have time to talk.
Oh yes.
You're almost better off starting broke in real estate investing than with money. Because when you've got money, you've got something to lose, mm-hmm. right? When you don't have any money, you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Mm-hmm. So you go more in debt, if you've got a job as a school teacher and you've got a great pension and you want to use some of that money in a self-directed IRA, you want to move it over and it's like, I don't know, mm-hmm. Campbell, I'm not quite sure I want to take that. So I always say starting from zero in real estate investing is the best place to be because you've got that fire in your belly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Yuko and I ever would have started doing what we're doing had we not gone through absolute hell in the end of 2007 through 2011. It was unbearably horrible. And I know people that went through way worse than us. Mm-hmm. But having people knock on your door in the middle of the night to pick up your car and mm-hmm. and all the horrible, horrible things. And there's other people that, the divorces and the suicides and everything else. Coming from there, not the suicide and divorce thing, but coming from there is a good place to come from.
Right.
It makes you scrappy.
Yes. I've do you listen to Coach Carson at all? He does real estate also.
I know who he is.
He always started because he started out with nothing after college. And he also said that's the best way to start because it makes you learn about other financing options. Like he's really, really big into seller financing and negotiating deals. And then also the private money aspect, where if you can put together a business plan and you know you have a good deal and you're out there every day searching for deals, and then you can put it together and present it to an investor and, you know, convince them to bet on this like fresh guy out of college. It's one of the best ways to start. And I think anyone can start over in real estate and learn that, because I mean, honestly, the numbers on some of his properties are hands down better than mine, because he made it with the deals, kind of like how you're talking about, where that's how you make the good investments is how you structure it.
And you had asked earlier what numbers look like in my area. So, you know, when I was buying, when I started buying, and like I said, this opportunity is coming, then we'll have a similar opportunity that we had a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And if you let that opportunity go, it's going to be another 15, 20 years before anything remotely close happens. So be ready, you know, get out there and educate yourself, figure out what the heck it is you're going to do, and do it. If you're going to go after single family, put your blinders on and go after it. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about duplexes and triplexes and apartment complexes and condos and vacation rentals. Stay focused. Don't be like me.
I think after this whole experience, I'm like mortified of, first of all, vacation rentals because they're so discretionary, and then also apartment complexes, because the number of people I see freaking out on Facebook on these real estate groups saying my entire complex is banded together to do a rent strike and now they have no income is a really scary place to be. So I'm glad your littler apartment complexes work out. And I think that's interesting too, the type of structure you look for, being that single plumbing wall. After you start, the more houses you walk, you start to learn different things about buildings in terms of what is a good investment to buy. And I don't think a lot of people talk about that.
Yeah, back-to-back plumbing walls and houses. You know, a bathroom that backs up to the kitchen on a small 3-1. Excellent, right? If you got to tear into the plumbing where it's coming in, you know where it terminates. And you're not disrupting everything. So there's a lot of little things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go over my 400 videos, I go into a lot of it. So
yeah. You guys, you and Rick have so much content. I'm like, it will take me 1,000 years. And I feel like I'm out here hustling myself. And I'm like, I don't know how people have time to watch all these videos, which is terrible, because I'm like, there's so much I could learn from you guys. And I'm like, I'll take like a day a week maybe and watch some of your guys' videos. I'm like, there's little nuggets in there, but some of it I know, some of it I'm like, oh, this is new and novel. But oh my goodness, there's so much good content out there and I don't have the time. But I'm a full-time employee. Agree, but
what do you do?
I'm a medical and scientific liaison. So I actually work from home for essentially like a diagnostics company. So I do high risk pregnancy genetic testing. I like do education on it. So I'm like the nerd they send to doctor's offices to teach them about a genetic test they might want to order for patients. So it's a very niche job.
You know, I'm very pro keep your day job.
Yes.
I'm not a real big fan of, I want to get to the point where I can quit my day job. Mm-hmm. I don't like that talk, because your day job funds your bills. So you have to have that. And that gives you an ability to borrow money too. Mm-hmm. Banks don't like investors.
Right.
Like just invest. Mm-hmm. So Yuko and I set up our company a long time ago where we get a steady paycheck every week and we pay taxes and that kind of thing, even though we own the company.
Right.
But banks look favorably upon those things. And had we had good jobs and found real estate investing, I probably would have quit by now. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, 12 hours a day or whatever. But I think everybody should keep their job. I don't like that talk about, Mark, when do you think I can quit my day job? Never. That's not the goal.
I watch a lot of people try to quit their day job so hard that they like hate their life for 5 years and then they quit and it wasn't quite what it all chalked up to be. And so I'm very pro. I just changed my profile originally because we were talking about like FIRE being a really big movement where people just want to retire. And I'm like, I like the independence and I'm more here for the work optional. Like I want to get up every day and go to my job because I enjoy it, not because I have to be there. Yeah. And I think that's what you can get to in real estate. And it takes a lot less to truly be like my job is kind of optional, but I like to also spend money and go on vacations and stuff. So it would take longer to totally quit my job, but I love my job and what I do. So, but again, it's like seeking a job that fits your lifestyle that you're trying to build, I think is something helpful. So plus banks love me because I have a really high credit score. I have no personal debt and I have a solid income. So.
We have zero debt except for real estate and same thing. Same thing. We kind of low profile people, but we enjoy things. I mean, we have a beautiful house in Hawaii that we don't visit very often anymore. Actually, we've got it rented out now because it doesn't make financial sense to have it sit there empty while we're not there.
Right.
But yeah. And I mean, we plan on spending a lot of time there. We got a 16-year-old. That's the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And once he gets squared away.
How many kids do you have, by the way?
Three boys, 29, 22, and 16.
Very nice. Do any of them do real estate as well, or are they doing other things?
Nope. But they're going to inherit a crap load.
That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, I will leave a legacy, and they'll have that. I haven't decided exactly. Right now, I'm pretty anal about those kinds of things. I'm not anal about detail. I'm not a detail guy at all.
Yeah.
I'm a like round number, like I think this is a good thing. Let's go with it kind of guy. But as far as that goes, because there's three boys with three personalities, I set that up pretty carefully.
Yep. Definitely. So, very interesting. Because I think a lot of people like to say it's hard to build businesses with kids, but I think the fact is kind of most people are building it and you hustle anyway. It's again, the get up every day. Don't be afraid to be beaten down and work hard. It's a lot of hard work to kind of build to where you're at, which is goals. So,
and you started when, 2 years ago?
So I did Dave Ramsey and paid off all of our personal debt started in 2016, 2018. We finished that. And then we sold a property, our house on 5 acres, and we used it to buy a tiny house for us. And then not actually a tiny house, but like a small ranch, 1,000-square-foot ranch, and then a rental property in 2008. And that was our first one. And then since then we bought a duplex, another single family home. And then right now I'm doing my first like private money deal as we speak. So
yeah, that earlier.
Yes. No one knows yet. So, or I guess a few people of Instagram know, but I direct message.
Now everyone knows.
Everyone's going to know by the time this launches. I kind of have a backlog of podcasts. So hopefully it will either come out first on our podcast that we're talking about, or I'll post it before then. We'll see who beats me to it. But essentially I had two possible private lenders that I was talking to. And one again had like that really high interest rate of 11%. And then I was talking to some family members because I've been networking on Instagram and they say like always check with family to see if that's anything that you would pursue. And so if you take this like high term to your family members, they're like, wow, that's a terrible interest rate. You know, maybe we could do better. And so if you have relatives that are like looking for an easy income where you can set up like a simple contract and say like, hey, uncle, so-and-so, like, here's my plan. I can at least match your bonds. So if you'd pull money out of here from your portfolio, where would you go? And so we kind of presented it around to kind of see what our interest was. And I thought I'd get told no. And we actually got some yeses on the investment. But it's my first, it's a house on a walkout basement in a high cost of living area. But the walkout basement has a second unit. So it's like an up and down duplex, or it will be. But it was a really good way because most single family homes are in the $200,000 range, which doesn't sound like a lot to you, but in our area, that's expensive, $200,000 to $300,000, for the Midwest. And it's just a very, really high demand school district. And so if you can buy it as a two unit and it's zoned correctly, you can make it a duplex. And so that's how you can get rent that supports that price point. And so I'm super excited to venture into that it's a good one.
That is good. That is good. That's another great point you bring up is most people don't look at how a property can make more money when they're buying it. Because in California, for all of our California listeners, or I don't know how many you have, we have an ADU law here. So the state of California makes the city allow you to build ADUs, which are just little rental houses in the back. Mm-hmm. And at one time you couldn't rent them out. Now you can.
Is it supposed to combat the high, like the need for affordable housing, isn't it, in Correct. California?
Okay. Yeah. And if you live there, you can actually do an ADU and a junior ADU. So that means you can do a one bedroom, one bath, and a like a studio next to it.
If you don't, that's very cool.
If you don't live there, you can only do the ADU. But a lot of those at least allow us to almost break even, which that's not, my rule book doesn't say break even.
Yeah.
It does make money. But being able to break even on a regular deal is amazing here.
Yeah.
And I always base my deals on no down payment. So, and I've been doing that since the beginning and I've never changed it. And it's kind of a good mindset to get into, is that I don't put any money into a deal. Not to say we haven't.
Right.
But I always look at deals from that standpoint to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Is how you can buy it and structure it to not have to put money.
Without putting a penny in. Yes.
Because I think a lot of people are scared of real estate and are scared of the not putting your own money into it mindset, but I will probably cash out refi this one eventually, because that's kind of what the my better interest rate private funding part wanted. But yeah, for now, it should be a really good deal. And it's, again, kind of like how you're talking about, I was enjoying your talk about this shared plumbing wall, because essentially that's what I'm doing as well, as like you have a single family home and you have like, it already has two bathrooms. It already has the upgraded plumbing. It already has 200 amp service. It already has all the mechanicals to support two units in one house, but it's not like, and it was already zoned the proper zoning, which is amazing. I don't have to have it rezoned. And so it was really just set up. It just needs a better fire barrier. So essentially I had to tear down this like drop ceiling and put up drywall instead. And then it's ready to go. So
yeah.
It's interesting to look at it that way, because people will tell you like, oh, you're not going to get rental properties in this town, and you can, and the rents are higher and people really want it. Like the last time I posted a house kind of next to this area, I had almost like 200 people apply, which probably isn't that much in California, but I live in the middle of nowhere. I was shocked.
No, we don't get that. We don't get that.
I think it was like 150. And I was like, it's not even that great of a spot. It's next to this school district. It wasn't even in it. So yeah, I think I'm on to something.
What is your average rent? I mean, for a three bedroom, two bath house?
So the house where I'm at with this property, so the private financing is about $2,100, $1,300-ish. Outside of that area is more like $1,000 a month. So okay. I've seen them go up to 1500, but outside of the school district, it's usually about 1000, maybe a little above for like a 3-in-1.
Yeah. So if you started doing some hardcore, I don't know what works there. Every area is different,
mm-hmm.
whether it's postcards or cold calling or texting right. or ringless voicemail or all the things that are annoying that people hate. and some of them that are across the line of probably legality.
the ringless calling is one that it makes me raise my eyebrows, but it's interesting. I mean, but it works for people. So
we don't do that. We don't do that. It's we tried it and it was like, yeah, this is really too close to the edge.
Yeah.
We're already gray, but we don't really want to delve off that.
You found your own line.
Yeah. So we drew the line, but we've crossed it a lot of times. Actually we just moved it. But that's the way you're going to find deals. If you've got like an area like that where the rent is so close to the value of the house, you know, as far as the 1% rule, and 1% mm-hmm. rule doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
Depends on, you know, what really matters is what the house is worth, what you can sell it for in the future, if you're ever going to sell it, and, you know, what your payment is versus what the rent is. You know, everybody's so worried about having all of these numbers line up the way they're supposed mm-hmm. to line up. Look, it either makes sense or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such easy math. And when it becomes difficult, that's when you're starting to fudge numbers. When you're having a hard time, look, I've got this house. It's $200,000. The rent is $2,000 a month. My mortgage is $1,100. Okay. You're barely going to cash flow.
Yep.
Come close to not cash flowing on that. If you look at my ever popular 40% rule, which everyone hates because it makes every deal bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you follow that, you'll know that at least at the end of the month, you'll have that $200 when everything hits the fan.
And remind people that don't know about your 40% rule, because you and Rick talk about this all the time on your Wednesday night talk, yeah. And I absolutely love it. But if you, no one's ever heard your 40% rule, tell them a bit about it.
It's not probably not even mine. I think I came up with it, but
we'll give you the credit.
The 42% rule or the 50% rule, depending on what you have and where you're at. Mm-hmm. 40% of your rent goes towards expenses, not including your payment. Mm-hmm. So the expenses are property taxes, insurance, CapEx, which is capital expenses, roofs, driveways, you know, tornado damage, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Stuff not covered by insurance. Maintenance, property management, utilities, whatever.
That's the only one.
Expensive. I know. I think I got it all.
I think you did. Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. But it's more than you think. It's more than you think. And what happens is everybody has this propensity to fudge numbers. It's like, well, I know that I'm not going to have any vacancy because Uncle Joe said he's going to stay there for 5 years. Uncle Joe had a heart attack after 6 months, guys. And now it's empty. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Joe was a smoker. And now you got to repaint. And now you got to recarpet. And it doesn't matter what you think. And if you've got that money, then bank it. Because something else will come along as you have a bunch of units. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you can take a disbursement at the end of the year. Maybe you've got $50,000, $60,000 in your account at the end of the year. You can take $30,000 disbursement. It's like there's not much chance that something's going to hit that hard. As you get more units, you can play with that. But you use that forever and ever, and it keeps you safe.
Yep. I like that because I've used the 50% rule, and I feel like where I live, things are a little cheaper. And so I don't think I need to be setting aside that much. But then I now run it in a fancy spreadsheet that's probably too complex. So we'll see if it boils down after time.
No.
It's similar.
The 40% rule is just to evaluate properties.
Yep.
And then a spreadsheet comes in handy, which I don't know how to do, but I've got someone that knows.
That's
another
good.
Another new company in my office that does that. So. Yeah, it's important to run true numbers, but I'll never go below 40. If it comes out to 32%, I don't care. I'm still going to use 40.
Yeah.
But if it comes out to 45, I'll use that.
Right.
So apartments tend to run a little higher. So.
Do you keep a certain amount of cash on hand? Do you keep because I tend to just spend all of mine as soon as I get it on more property. I don't know. I'm still trying to find a real estate person that's good at saving, but I don't know if you keep a cushion or if you have an idea of like what new people should do.
Well, yeah.
What should you do and what actually have you done?
Well, we don't spend. We're not spenders. I know you're spending yours on real estate, but when you have private money, that's not an issue, is it?
Right.
Bank financing and private money are the two things that you have to keep going. You know, you don't have an infinite amount of private money. So you have to have bank financing to complement that after a couple of years. Once the property's seasoned, you want to get bank financing out so you can use that private money for another purchase. But yes, we keep, I don't know. Sometimes there's a couple $100,000 in there. Sometimes there's a massive amount of money. It just depends on what we're closing and what's going on. Sometimes I look in there and my knees knock and I get diarrhea because it's like, oh God, how did that happen? Or, you know, why have we only got $50,000 or $60,000 in our account? That doesn't seem prudent. Because we have expenses that, you know, some people don't have. We've got a couple people working for us in an office. And
right. How many people are in your office? Are they primarily in you? They're all doing like your real estate and flip business.
Yeah. Austin, if you've seen my stuff, you'll see Austin, young Austin. Mm-hmm. He's 22. He came to me, like I said, to be my videographer and ended up that lasted. And he's a professional videographer. He's really good at it. And he's got a name in BMX and skateboarding. He's really good. That quickly, he came here to learn real estate under the guise of, I'll be your video guy. He's so smart that he just went right into real estate and now I have to do my own videos again. But but I've got him and then Yuko Yu is my wife's name is also Yuko.
Mm-hmm.
So assistant named Yuko. And we kind of share her and she runs a lot of our private money stuff. She handles the notes and the promissory notes and filings and she stays in touch with all the investors because we've got less than 100 and more than 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of people to manage for sure.
Somewhere around there. So that's what we've got. And then we've got property managers in Hawaii. We've got property managers in Sacramento and some handymen that work for us, but just part-time. Okay. I don't have a full-timer like Rick.
Do you have a full-time property manager in any of the places that's yours, or do you just use property management companies?
No. I think Jimmy and Angie in Sacramento, they manage our units, plus they manage about 30 units that we've sold to Japanese investors over the years. Mm-hmm. So we're their biggest client. So.
Okay.
And then our property manager in Hawaii does a lot of vacation rental management over there.
Okay. So that's kind of, did you sell them as turnkey rentals, I wonder, when you sold them to like the Japanese investors, because it was already kind of set up with a property management company?
Well, we bought the house, we did the repairs, then we sold them, but they were already rented out and mm-hmm. with property. So it was true turnkey.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's another investor who I can't remember right now who does like just turnkey, like prepares them for another investor, gets them rented, gets everything set up, and then hands them off, which is a really interesting model. I think if your market supports it.
It does. It's tough because you have to sell a slightly above market because of everything you've done. Mm-hmm. So that has to be explained. You know, it's like, you're selling a house for 120 that would probably sell for 100, 105, mm-hmm. but it's been gone through. The systems have been gone through. You've got a management company lined up. You've got all the people, all the stuff lined up that you would have to find as an individual investor. Mm-hmm. So if you can explain that well, then people will go for it.
How did you learn your market? Like, how did you decide like Sacramento was a good place to invest? How did you get, because it sounds like you're in Memphis. Is it trial and error? Is it?
Yeah, just blind. I like to try things, and hence the $1 million loss. but yeah, Memphis was through a friend of ours, and he actually ran everything there. We found all the buyers, mm-hmm. so that was good for us because we didn't. I would fly out there, but. You know, I couldn't keep track of everything that was going on there and then keep track of the investors.
Right.
Sacramento. Why did I start there? I think I was just looking for places outside of Southern California because we were doing turnkey here in LA. Mm-hmm. Prices had gotten so high that I had to find something else.
Yeah.
We had two clients. We had people that didn't have very much money that were investing in Memphis. And then people that had, you know, 150, 175,000. To invest in LA at the time. And then LA went up to 225. And strangely enough, the water shut off. Mm-hmm. And I had to find something new to replace it. And somewhat familiar with Sacramento, but not very. I didn't really know the areas. So we made mistakes. We went into an area that was really inexpensive and bought a bunch of properties up and sold them. And then we had massive amounts of headaches with break-in. Drugs and gunshots and things like that happen. Mm-hmm. And we've learned kind of over the years, we've helped our people sell those and move into something else and trial and error.
I think the biggest thing I'm learning from everyone is just like pivoting and changing your business model over time, because it sounds like it's constantly changing. Like what works one year might not work the next. And
yeah, we're definitely pivoting right now.
The
thing is though, is what I try to teach mm-hmm. is that when you're first starting out, it's all the same.
Yeah.
You get your first rental house. Don't worry about buying an apartment complex. Don't worry about making a huge deal. Buy your first rental house and you'll probably keep it for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You may decide once you get more involved in it that you want to buy 20 more houses, or you may want to buy some apartments, whatever. Get your first house, make sure it cash flows, learn the game, and then go from there. You get 100 investors in a room and 99, let's say 95 of them won't do anything. Mm-hmm. All right, they just won't. Just getting knowledge is enough, and saying that, yeah, I'm studying investing and I'm looking into being an investor, or mm-hmm. I am an investor, I hear it all the time. And what have you done? I haven't really done anything yet. That's cool. All right, 95 out of 100 people are gonna do that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get maybe four that are going to buy their first house and maybe buy a couple more. And then you're going to get one out of 100 that is just one of those really over-the-top people that's going to go, okay, look, if I buy 10 houses, I can actually turn that into a 100-unit apartment complex and then get to 1,000. Then there's that guy too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's not very many of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even one of those guys. I know what lane I'm supposed to be in and I kind of stay with it.
Yeah.
And it's not because I can't change lanes if I want to. I just know that the reality is I'm fine with where I'm at.
Yeah. I'm not in the 10X lane. I'm more like the two, like somewhere I'm like above the average, like a few people, like a few rentals. Like I definitely want, like, I love like 10 would be a nice number for me, I think. Kind of looking at my portfolio right now, like that'd be the perfect little number for me to be where I want to be. So,
but you won't want to be there when you get there. You want to be somewhere else. And that's okay though. That's okay.
It's addicting.
We've had plateaus. It's like, okay, I want to have 5,000 a month income. I want to have 10,000. And you reach those goals and then it went to 15. And mm-hmm. then when you reach it and it's like, all right, now what? And then you start hanging around people that are doing more.
Yeah.
And they're making more money and you see what they're doing and you know, you pick your company well and it's great. You know, you'll move up wherever you want to be.
Yeah. Do you do like burr strategy then? Probably not where you are. So I know that's like, I always ask people about the hype words that happen all the time online now, because I think it's funny to get everyone's perspective, like real people that have done this a while on.
burr is not a method. I mean, I guess you can call it a method. It's, I know Brandon coined that phrase and that's cool. I love Brandon. He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
He's in Maui, you know?
He is in Maui.
He's one of my homies, even though he doesn't know me, but I know people that know him. I know people that deal with him because we're all in Hawaii. So I know people that fly over there and deal with him, but it's just the way things are done. You buy something, you leverage it. That's it. It's nothing. There's no magic to burr, you know, mm-hmm. It's just the way people have always done it, that leverage. If you have private money, why do you need to leverage?
Right. It makes sense.
Right.
So, interesting.
So it always comes back to that. And everybody, I can answer that with every question in investing always comes back to private money.
Yep.
And if you can't get private money, then yes, the burr method works. Just don't over leverage yourself.
Right. That's the key, is not stealing out from your cash flow. Like if you over leverage, people tend to, I think people are romanticizing the idea of the big check that they can post online versus crushing their cash flow.
you will never see one of my checks online. Never.
No, I won't do it for that reason, because it's an ego thing. It's not a.
Yeah. I might tell you my net worth. Mm-hmm. I might tell you how much I'm cash flowing every month.
Right.
Before COVID, 15 grand a month. My net worth is 3.75 million.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the biggest investor out there. And I'm not the smallest, but I'm very comfortable in my own skin.
Mm-hmm. But and I think that's the happy spot I want to be, where you're happy with where you're at. I think, I wonder how happy the people are that are really like at the $100,000, like net worth with their huge everything. I'll be there.
I'm not saying that that's not a good thing. And it's not that I want it so bad that it's
right.
It consumes me. But, you know, my wife and I are pretty aggressive and we'll get there if we want to. It takes a long time to get where we got, because you have to go through a lot of crap to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've kind of figured out what we do and what we don't. You know, we don't partner with other people. There's so many things that we won't do again that we've done in the past and then they've bit us in the ass more than once.
Right.
Sorry, I said a bad word.
Oh no, that's fine. Go right ahead. I really don't care.
No.
If someone is hoping for a PG or a grammatically correct podcast, this is not going to be for you.
So. You ask good questions. These are the questions that people need to know to get going, to not be scared.
I've been working hard on trying to figure out what people need to know that are kind of similar to where I'm at, because
how do I get started?
Yeah. Everyone wants to know how you got started. And it's like, you have to do something and then figure out what doesn't work.
here's my biggest piece of advice. Get started by starting, number one. Mm-hmm. Get going. educate, you know, learn what you can, because I mean, if you have to pay for a course, pay for a course. I pay for courses now for things that I want to learn quickly, like wholesaling. I wasn't sure, and I paid for it. And I know how to do it, but I needed to know what was working today. Right. So I didn't have to spend 6 months figuring it out. It was much cheaper for me. Do things that allow you to be an investor. Don't hang around shitty bars with your shitty friends.
Yeah.
Go to places where you're going to meet people that will uplift you. You're never going to get anywhere by hanging around with your old crowd. Mm-hmm. And people do it. People do it. I see their Instagram. It's on the weekend. It's like, yeah. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. Sorry. That part of your life is over.
Yeah. You know, whole new chapter. And I'm excited about it. Like, I don't need, I've done that. I'm good. My liver thanks me.
Mine too. Yeah. No, I was there for years having a good time as a contractor. I
mean,
I was
like, yeah.
So know what you want, mm-hmm. know what you want, and go after it. And you've got to make sure that when you get started, you don't go in and get in over your head. And the way you do that is by listening to people that have done it before and screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
To learn more, I can talk to you all day long about how happy it is to be an investor. But if you don't know the stupid things that come along with it, you'll make the same mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll quit and you'll be broke and you'll never invest again. So listen to the older people and even younger people that have done stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
Best advice.
I keep picking people's advice. So I have this duplex right now and we bought it as a fixer and our jobs are just crazy right now and taking off. And so we just don't have time to fix it. And we were going to DIY it. And there's just no physically possible way we can with a 1-year-old. And like my husband's working 6 days a week. And so we have half our duplex. Well, the whole thing is sitting vacant right now. It's not rented and we tore it apart. And then that's how it sits. And so I've been picking the brains of people and they're like, you need to find someone to finance the renovation, like to hire it out and get that thing up and running. And it's mm-hmm. just like out of my comfort zone, but you kind of dive in that way. But again, it's kind of picking the brains of people that are less afraid of debt than you and saying, okay, but you're going to get your money back and start getting returns faster that way. And
yeah, it's going to cost you less to get it done now than have it sit.
Yeah.
Because it's rotting away.
Literally. Yeah. That's what I keep looking at. I'm like,
don't know.
Yep. And so it's killing me to see there and sit it vacant. So I finally found my repair man, my rehab guy gave me a quote exactly. I had two that were really, really high quotes. Finally got one that was low enough and he's a really good guy. He's like a family friend who has like his own company. Like he's a team. He has four guys. He's really, you know, doing well in his side business. So, so we're finally hiring it out after taking some advice and figuring
good.
That out.
Sure don't get me. Just
yep.
Don't prepay.
Yep. Prepay. Yeah.
Never prepay.
Yep.
Because they
we're
always
not prepaying.
Ask.
Yeah.
They always ask. It's like, okay, I got to get the tile. And it's like, oh, I'll pick up the tile. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I need to get paid for the bathrooms. I'm getting ready to start them. It's like, no.
Yep. As we walk through it, we're going to pay as we go. And then I already have all the materials sitting there.
Awesome.
So
you'll do fine.
It's exciting because I buy like half our materials online, like online Amazon, and then I pull so much off of Facebook Marketplace. Like I just have like a whole room of doors right now. So that's what I do in my spare time is buy off Facebook Marketplace construction materials. All right. So to wrap up today, I have one question I've been asking everyone, and I think you'll really enjoy it because it sounds like you do a lot of this. So my new question I'm asking everyone for the end is, so part of my 2020 was I'm outsourcing things more that I hate. So outsourcing what sucks in my life, pretty much. Like I outsource cleaning. Like I have a cleaning lady that comes to my house.
I lost a housekeeper about 2 months ago and haven't replaced her yet. So mm-hmm. and puttering around the house, taking care of that. My wife is a workaholic, God bless her. So same. She works at the house now. Outsource, it's funny. I have a pool guy,
mm-hmm.
I have a yard guy. So that's outsourced. Yeah. But I still wash the cars because I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I get up Saturday and do hers. I get up Sunday and do mine.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm taking them down to the drive-through car wash thing. So it doesn't take long.
Yeah.
But I've done them by hand ever since the beginning of time.
That's
up until
awesome.
A few months ago. outsource. I mean, at work, I outsource almost everything. There's not much that I actually do.
That's managing people.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. To my detriment, sometimes. Sometimes I get in trouble for outsourcing too much.
Too much. What have you gotten in trouble for outsourcing too much?
Not paying attention to details that are, you know, financial details that are happening. I let other people handle it. And, you know, we had a meeting this morning on a property in Hawaii that we're selling and another project over there. And there's releases from our investor have to be signed and everything. And I told someone to do it, Yuko Yu, and she's handling it, and it's great. Mm-hmm. But there was a couple of details that I probably failed to tell her about that I needed to do, and I assumed she knew. So
yeah,
I base a lot of things on assumptions around here because I'm a shiny object guy.
Yep. It's good to be aware.
I need to be contained.
You have a team of handlers, it sounds like.
I do. People know me. I've got three people in my very close vicinity that realize who I am, and I think
that's
they
a
like
good place.
Me. I think they like me. I'm not sure.
They're going to keep you around at least.
I drive them crazy. I know that.
And it's like the happiest day of my life, the most money I've ever spent, because I just hate it. I don't have time with a job in real estate and doing all the things we do. And so what do you and your wife outsource? Thank you so much for talking today. And hopefully we can do this again. I will think of you with my one plumbing system and my one electrical system. So shared wall. All right. Well, have a wonderful day, Mark. Thank you so much for talking today. Gosh, did you all just love this episode? I hope you're enjoying each of these podcasts as much as I am. If you are, please go subscribe to the podcast and spread the word by sharing your thoughts on Instagram. If you are not already aware, I'm pretty much obsessed with Instagram, so seriously, come find me. Instagram is the place where I'm going to announce every new podcast episode. I also share new products as I post them into my store. And I also am just going to be oversharing way too much about my personal life as a DIY landlord and a working boss mom. Thanks so much for listening.